also threatens human health, as heavy metals and other toxins are released into the air and spread by dusty desert winds. After decades of argument, who is responsible for cleaning up an accidental lake that's accidentally been destroyed? Restoration has begun at the Salton Sea. California's Proposition 68, passed in 2018, included $200 million for lake restoration, which got the work party started. Then the feds kicked in another $250 million for health mitigations in late 2022. One current project is building new wetlands and ponds for fish and birds, replicating nature that also keep down the dust. Now the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has joined in, starting with a feasibility study of other concepts and proposals. Corps endorsement of particular public works projects could bring with it serious federal financial support, up to two-thirds of total costs, which is great news for California, far from flush these days. So now we wait to see what the proposed solutions to the Salton Sea decline will be. Counting on more Colorado River water to plump up the Salton Sea is probably not an option. So which makes the most sense? Desalination plants along the edges of the Salton Sea, or along Mexico's Sea of Cortez? A giant engineered straw to deliver ocean water 165 miles to the Salton Sea for desalination there? Splitting the lake in two? Pumping toxic water elsewhere? Stay tuned. Until next time, this is Kim Weir for Up the Road.
Hello, this is Ken Logan. And first, let me say this. You are listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And also, you can listen to KZFR on the Internet, anywhere in the world where you have access to the Internet, on kzfr.org. You know what? This is Ken Logan. I'm a family practice doctor, and you're soon to be listening, if you stay tuned, to The Doctor's Inn. And The Doctor's Inn is a show where I talk about issues and information in medicine or health that I think the general public, you the listener, may be interested in hearing about, or things that I think are not well described otherwise, in general. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. It's actually my opinions. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your list, your event listed, visit Friends of the Art on .net, I believe. I'm not sure about their, but Friends of the Art, Google it. That's what I'd say. And by Chico News and Review, your monthly local news and entertainment source. The June issue features the Chico Summer Bucket List, Fast Track Infrastructure Projects, and more. The Chico News and Review is available at over 550 locations throughout Butte, Glynn, and Tehama counties, and online at chiconewsreview.com. And Best of Chico voting continues at chicobestof.com. today's show, The Doctor's Inn, is going to be a couple things. But mainly what I'm going to do today is give you and talk about the vitamin B12 story. And you'd say, oh boy, how boring is that going to be? And I'd say, well, okay. But really it is, and it's a complicated story. It's interesting, and it's something we all need to know, I say. And in researching for this, doing a bunch of reading for this show, it was much more complicated than I thought. And there's some things that are really important for all of us to understand when it comes to vitamin B12 in our lives that I actually wasn't aware of, and I should have been. Then, if I have time, I'm going to bounce a little into just a brief thing about explaining to us all, to you, and so that we all have in our minds the categories, the functional categories of healthcare providers, and most specifically, the difference, the presence of DOs, which are doctors of osteopathy, and MDs, medical doctors like myself, and how we do the same things and we should think of them similarly and all that. I'm going to give you those kind of details, which I think we all need to review and know full well. Okay, so now, ta-da, vitamin B12. Drum roll, please. So first I'm going to talk about the definition of what vitamins are, because we got to be on the same page with that. Vitamins are things that our body needs in order to remain alive, but yet our bodies do not make. Therefore, vitamins are things that we need to eat or consume on a fairly regular basis. And by consume or eat, I don't mean that we need to have, I don't mean that we have to take vitamin supplements for that. In other words, I'm not saying that we all need to take vitamin pills. But what I'm saying is that we all need to eat wisely in order to help ourselves have the vitamins we need inside us, among the many other benefits of eating wisely. Therefore, the foods that we eat is where the important issue lies. Then, maybe some form of vitamin supplementation might be also helpful, possibly. But foods is important, of course. Let me repeat this fact about vitamins. Vitamins, by definition, are definitely present in foods. That's where they're present. Therefore, when we eat wisely, which means adequate variety of food sources in our dietary, in our diet, in our daily eating, we do not generally need to take vitamin supplements, because vitamins are present in the foods if we eat an adequate variety of food sources. Then, however, there does exist certain vitamin deficiencies in some people that indeed may require taking one or more specific type of vitamin. But even in those cases, food sources need to be considered also to help with those vitamin deficiencies. Again, an important point is that this relates to our food. And when we eat, and what we eat, and what we eat is important in our lives. Duh. Important in our body functions, important for our health, important for our well-being. We are all, of course, in charge of the food we eat and the choices of foods we eat and the amount of food we eat. And it's my opinion that it's a very important self-responsibility for each of us. There, I said it. So food choices that we each make are very challenging for each of us, right? And for many reasons, which, of course, include cost. But the challenges also includes the way foods out there are staring at us in a variety of tantalizing ways. I think it's very important for us all to stay as grounded as we possibly can relative to remaining as wise as possible when we choose our foods that we eat. We are what we eat. Today, I'm going to talk about vitamin B12. And as part of that discussion, I'm going to talk about various foods as well as issues related to possible supplementation, but also about vitamin B12 deficiency and, here's an important thing, including some risk factors that are out there relative to increasing the likelihood for people acquiring vitamin B12 deficiency. So that's important to know about. So human beings are not able to make our own vitamin B12, right? They're a vitamin. However, some people may wonder if we kind of can make our own vitamin B12 inside ourselves, that is, by vitamin B12 being made by some of the usual bacteria that are present inside our bowels. Therefore, here's the question you might have relative to that. Do any of the bacteria that live in our bowels make vitamin B12? And if so, can it be a vitamin that we therefore can absorb into our bloodstream from that source, that bacteria-making source from our bowel? And there's a short answer to that question, and there's a long answer to that question. The short answer is this: no, not really. And I'm going to end it, that answer right there, rather than going on to it's an interesting story why that's the case, but the point is, no, not really. In other words, we don't get enough. If we get any B12 from bacteria that are in our bowels, it's very small. And that's only in some people. Now I'm going to talk, in a minute or two, I'm going to talk about the food sources of vitamin B12, of course. And that's going to be important, especially when it comes to the issue of adequate quantities of B12 in some foods when it's where it's present, and definitely not adequate in quantity, in concentration, in other foods where it's even present, but it's in such a minuscule amount, it doesn't matter. And so when you see some foods as, yeah, they got B12 in them, and it's so small it doesn't even matter, well, you need to know that, and I'm going to talk to you about that. Knowing what these foods are is not complicated, though. So I'll get to that in a minute. However, first, I want to talk more specifically about the vitamin B12 itself. That is exactly what the heck it is, and some interesting and slightly complicated issues about it. First of all, why is it important to make sure, as best we can, that our vitamin B12 level in our body is adequate? Well, here's what vitamin B12 does for us in our bodies. There's three areas here of importance relative to where in our body we rely on vitamin B12. And here's the issues. First, it's vitamin B12 is distinctly one of the things that is needed for the health and function of our brain and all other nerves in our body, and the covering around them, the myelination as well. It's needed also for the ongoing production of DNA, our DNA, for crying out loud. You know, the blueprint stuff within the cells of our body determining how each of the cells function. And as it turns out, a variety of large number of other molecules that needed B12 in order for them to carry on their metabolic activities in our body. And then finally, it's important for us all to know that vitamin B12 is absolutely needed, one of the things that's needed for the adequate production of our blood cells, that is red blood cells and white blood cells and platelets that are made in our bone marrow. It requires, one of the things that requires, is adequate amounts of vitamin B12 in our bloodstream. Therefore, this is an important vitamin. Okay, where does vitamin B12 come from? We need to eat foods that have vitamin B12 in order for it to be present in our bodies, right? If for some reason a person does not eat the kinds of foods that are the most abundant sources or robust levels of concentration of B12 present in them, then they may need to take supplements of B12. You'll see in a minute where and how to identify if you or someone you know might be someone who does not eat adequate amounts of foods where B12 is present for one reason or another. If you pull it up online and you're going to look at the list of foods that where B12 is present, it could be fairly long depending on the site you're looking at. However, it became very obvious to me when I pulled all this up on the internet. It's important when you looked at the list of foods. It's important for you to look at from a standpoint of the real world and reality and the practical side of things, which is a whole different look. And I'm going to explain what I mean. First of all, there's really only three categories of food that have adequate presence of or concentration of B12 in them. Now, there's minute amounts of B12 in some other categories of food, but the B12 in those foods is such a minuscule amount that it hardly matters from a practical standpoint. The three categories of food where vitamin B12 is readily present are animal things, such, in other words, meats of all kinds. I'll talk a little bit more about what meats, but it's really meats of all kinds. Well, let me say it now, meats of all kinds. In other words, beef, pork, lamb, fish, and mainly in fish, it's salmon-type fish. Now, there's probably some in white fish, but less. And poultry, white meat to a degree, but I'm not exactly sure of this, but I think a bit more in the dark meat. And then now, that's the category of food. Meats is the category of food where the highest concentration of vitamin B12 is present. However, when you look a little further in the discussion, you also have to take into consideration something called the bioavailability of the vitamin B12 that's present in what you're eating. And now I'm going to talk about the second category of food that is important relative to vitamin B12 presence. And that is the milk products, such as milk and yogurt. And right now, what I said about bioavailability, so milk products such as milk and yogurt don't have as concentrated a level or amount of vitamin B12 as do meats, but the B12 that's in the milk and yogurt is three times more bioavailable when you do compare it to the B12 that's in meats. In other words, the bottom line there is milk and yogurt is a significant source of vitamin B12 in one's diet as well. The third area of dietary presence of B12 is if you happen to consume the fortified nutritional yeast. In other words, something called fortified nutritional yeast. That category of food actually has a significant amount of B12 also. So, the overall picture comparing these foods, I'd say that meat sources of B12 and milk and yogurt sources of B12 are both good sources, as is fortified nutritional yeast, good source of vitamin B12. Now let me talk a little bit about foods that have small amounts of B12 present that you'll see if you look this up, and you ought to know about this. Now, it doesn't mean there isn't B12 in them. It's just they're fairly small amount, not zero, but fairly small amount of B12 is present in them, and you will get some B12 from them, just not as great amount. And that is in eggs, cheddar cheese, and tempeh. Then there's various other sources, places that B12 is present in plant products that, however, is so darn small in concentration that it doesn't really matter. So I don't want you to think, it's my advice that you don't consider these foods as significant sources of B12 for you. If you relied on these, you're going to, I suspect you will not have adequate vitamin B12 in your body. And those doesn't mean they aren't great foods for other reasons, and eat them, but just don't eat them for B12. Don't rely on them for B12. And those foods are spinach, kidney beans, bananas, whole wheat bread, strawberries, and others, I'm sure. So those foods have little bits of B12 in them. Eat them for other vitamins and minerals and taste and fiber and all the other things that you eat those spinach and kidney beans and bananas and whole wheat bread and strawberries for, but just don't rely on them for B12 is my advice. Okay, and so remember, from a practical standpoint, the foods with the most robust presence of availability of B12 are meats, red meats, salmon, maybe the dark meat in poultry, milk, yogurt, and nutritional fortified yeast. And a little bit in eggs and tempeh and cheddar cheese. If you're not an eater of these foods that have the most vitamin B12 in them, in other words, if you eat, let's say, vegan way, where you eat no animal products at all, your intake of vitamin B12 is quite low, comparatively speaking. That then would put you in a nutritional situation where you could talk about supplementing. In other words, you could talk to your healthcare provider about two things. Maybe about having a check on a vitamin B12 blood test to see where you sit. And when you get a vitamin B12 level, sometimes the doctor might also order something called a methylmalonic acid level and or a homocysteine level, because those two things go up high or when somebody ain't got enough vitamin B12 around. So it's a confirmation kind of test. I don't think real strong about them tests personally. I say get the darn vitamin B12 level and use it for as you can for information. And anyway, so if you eat vegan, you might want to get a vitamin B12 level done. If you're eating vegan and you're already supplementing with B12, you might consider getting a B12 level done to make sure you're getting enough and absorbing it well and all that. When it comes to taking supplements, interesting finding is if you take, let's say, 500 micrograms of B12 a day like 2% of that is absorbed, and 1,000 micrograms, about 1% of that is absorbed. It's just, I'm not exactly sure on those numbers, but it's, you know, don't think that, oh boy, I'm taking 1,000 micrograms of B12, I'm getting it. Well, no, I'm going to talk about the absorption of B12, and it doesn't exactly work that way. In other words, you can't always go by how much you're getting in the, what does it say on the bottle and how much you're getting. It's more complicated than that. Okay, so here's a thing that's one of the complicating things about the history or the situation, rather, with vitamin B12, and that's the absorption of that vitamin into the bloodstream. Once you're eating the foods or a supplement of B12, the getting of that B12 into your bloodstream is complicated. B12 is really a unique vitamin for many reasons, and one of them is again, how we get it into our bloodstream. And the story begins that B12 in the food we eat it's bound to a protein right off the bat in the food, and that has to be broken, okay, by our digestion. And then the next step is there's a carrying molecule called haptocorin, and that one needs to get cleaved off, and then B12 is there. But then it needs to get connected up with something called intrinsic factor, which is a molecule that's made on the inner linings of your stomach. And that is absolutely necessary, and absolutely necessary for it to join with the vitamin B12. And it's the vitamin B12 and intrinsic factor complex that then forms. And then once that is formed, then vitamin B12 can be absorbed into the bloodstream in the distal small intestine called the ileum. So this whole thing or process of absorption is quite a process to get. It's quite a process to get the B12 out of the food and into the bloodstreams where it's needed. Remember that term, I'd say, remember that term intrinsic factor that I said that's made in our stomachs, needed to join with B12 in order to get absorption done, because deficiency in that is one of the problems of vitamin B12 deficiency, which I'll talk about in a minute. So again, vitamin B12 is unique in many ways, not only because of the tissues of our body that are dependent on vitamin B12, but also because of the complicated process that's involved in the human body in order to get it into our bloodstream. All right. Quite interesting, is it not?
Yes.
Let me lay out various situations and various medical conditions that can lead to vitamin B12 deficiency. And that's as a result of how various situation and various medical conditions can mess with one or more of those steps in that complicated process of us getting B12 absorbed into our bloodstream. First, I'm going to return to the vegan, the intake of the situation. This is one of the various situations where the intake of B12 is low. The vegan eating. I already talked about the fact that vegan does not eat animal sources, therefore you're not getting significant amounts of B12. You're just not. So you're going to be low. So you may need to supplement. Supplementing is generally by pills orally where you swallow, or there's a sublingual under your tongue that dissolves, and or even a nasal spray. And then there's also a shot that you could give yourself. It's a prescription thing. And let me just say this. Relative to the oral, the pill, the nasal spray, and the sublingual, the reading I've done says they all absorb about the same amount. In other words, there's not one way that's better than another one on that. Even when it comes to the injection or the shot into muscle, the oral route is as well absorbed as the shot route. Now, I personally have a little question about that, which I may talk about in a couple minutes. And the shot B12 is something that's a prescription product. Okay, I might come back to that in a minute. Okay, now, I talked about vegan eating where there's no animal products eaten. Well, what about vegetarian eating, which means that people don't eat meats, but they might eat milk products and eggs, I believe. And remember, milk and yogurt are fair suppliers of B12. So therefore, it would possibly less likely that someone with vegetarian eating methods is low in B12 compared with vegan being probably pretty likely. Then, if a person does eat anybody, not vegan or vegetarian, but anybody, any of us, if we eat meat and milk and yogurt, but we only do it very periodically, like, you know, we hardly ever do it, but we do it, but it ain't very often, well, then you may not be getting enough B12. And, like if you only eat meat, any kind of meat product, including fish or poultry or dark meat poultry, maybe only two or three times a month or something like that, you know, and milk or yogurt not very often at all. Well, shoot, you might not be getting enough B12 in your food. And another thing about supplementing that we need to all be on the same page on supplementing a B12. B12 supplementation is generally not a dangerous thing. It's not a dangerous undertaking, you know. As compared to some fat-soluble, B12 is a water-soluble vitamin, not a fat-soluble vitamin. But, you know, some of the fat-soluble vitamins, when people are taking them in excess, then we get into some worries because they can be stored long time, and it makes me a little more worried. But vitamin B12 actually does do a storage thing in our livers, but apparently not stored to a point of being toxic in some way. Instead, if we're consuming what one might think is too much vitamin B12, it doesn't build up in us in a toxic way, apparently. In the reading I've done, even when a person's blood level of B12 is quite high, it doesn't seem to generally cause us harm. That's what I find. Okay, now I'm going to move to the medical conditions that may indeed affect the health, bring upon us low vitamin B, you know, B12 or B12 deficiency. And they have to do with medical conditions that affect the health of our stomachs and the medical conditions that affect the health of our small intestines, because they may be such that they get in the way of us getting enough B12 into our bloodstream. Remember, the stomach needs to be adequately healthy in order to produce something called, did you remember the name? Intrinsic factor, which is that thing that needs to join with the B12, and that B12 intrinsic factor complex is what's absorbed into the bloodstream. And remember, the area of our bowel that needs to be adequately healthy in order to do the absorbing of that vitamin B12 intrinsic factor complex is the distal small intestine part called the ileum. So our stomach needs to be okay and healthy for us to have an adequate vitamin B12, and our ileum, that part of the small intestine, needs to be healthy in order for us to have an adequate level of B12. So, therefore, diseases or procedures that affect our stomachs can lead to vitamin B12 deficiency. And those stomach procedures, as you can imagine, include stomach bypass surgeries, you know, for weight loss, or other surgeries that involve the stomach. And people who have had stomach bypass surgery, distinctly are treated for the rest of their life with B12 supplementation, and should have a blood level periodically. Then, stomach diseases that can affect our ability to keep our B12 okay include an autoimmune disease that attacks the stomach cells that make intrinsic factor, and that disease is called where the stomach cells are in an autoimmune fashion are not adequately healthy enough to make intrinsic factor, is called pernicious anemia. And you'd say, pernicious anemia? And let me just say this. I think that's an outdated name or title and should instead be called something like autoimmune intrinsic factor deficiency, because that's exactly what pernicious anemia is. It's an autoimmune disease. In other words, it comes upon us for who knows what brings it upon us. Autoimmune diseases are unknown, to my knowledge, as to why they occur in some people and not in others. But it's an autoimmune condition that decreases the ability of the stomach cells to make intrinsic factor. So why don't we call it that? Autoimmune intrinsic factor deficiency disease. Anyway, it's actually fairly common in people as we age, such as in our 60s or older. It's fairly common. And certainly by the time we are into our 70s, it's fairly common. Another stomach condition that can affect our B12 level, a stomach condition that's, again, fairly common as we age, is called atrophic gastritis, where the inner lining of the stomach goes through some changes over time and becomes less able to make adequate amounts of intrinsic factor. And it's a fairly common condition of our stomach when we age. That's called atrophic gastritis. And by the way, to my knowledge, atrophic gastritis and autoimmune intrinsic factor deficiency or pernicious anemia in and of themselves have no symptoms. In other words, they are asymptomatic conditions. The issue of what they're doing to the stomach, in other words, you don't get a bellyache from those conditions. Now, you get some symptoms maybe from low B12, but those two conditions, the pernicious anemia or the autoimmune intrinsic factor deficiency and atrophic gastritis, to my knowledge, are not medical conditions that have significant stomach symptoms with them. But they do affect our B12 level. That's my opinion. There are a couple categories. Now, here's a biggie. There's a couple categories of medications for other things that we take, some of us take, that can affect the way the stomach's ability to, or the GI tract's ability to absorb vitamin B12. In other words, decrease our B12 absorption. And this was news to me. I don't know from the reading I've done the severity that seems to happen of the B12 deficiency in as it relates to these two categories of medicines. But it is a risk factor. The use of these two medication products, and wait till I tell you what they are, they are one of the risk factors for developing B12 deficiency. And those two categories of medications that are commonly taken are, the first category is acid-lowering products, such as proton pump inhibitors, or PPIs, medications such as Prilosec, which is omeprazole, and Nexium, which is S-omeprazole, and the acid-lowering products, which are called in the category of H2 antagonists or histamine 2 antagonists, which are, and all of these are over-the-counter, by the way, now, those histamine 2 antagonists are, acid-lowering products are famotidine, which is sometimes called Pepcid, and ranitidine, which is sometimes called Zantac, and cimetidine, which is sometimes called Tagamet. If these are taken on a steady basis in someone for 1 year or longer, it is possible that decreases your vitamin B12 level. So it's one of the risk factors added to other risk factors in your life, possibly. The other category of medicine that can decrease one's vitamin B12 absorption is a medicine that's given, an oral medicine that's given commonly for type 2 diabetes. It is, first of all, type 2 diabetes is very common in the world. This medication, oral medication, is the most common medicine used in type 2 diabetes, hands down. And that medication is metformin. So metformin, if used for greater than 4 months, and let me tell you, anybody who's on metformin for type 2 diabetes, yeah, you take it for, I don't know, the rest of your life? Is that 4 months? Yeah, hopefully. So, in other words, for anything over 4 months of taking metformin at regular doses, decreases, potentially decreases your vitamin B12. So, in those categories of medicines, how severely they can lower somebody's B12 level is something that I did not see in the reading I did. So I don't know. But I would, if you're on any of those, like I've said, the acid-lowering products, any one of them, for longer than a year, steadily taking them for longer than a year or more, and metformin steadily taken for 4 months or more. If you're on either one of those, consider that that is one of the risk factors for acquiring B12 deficiency. And therefore, you should keep that in mind when you think about whether or not you have other things that could be increasing the likelihood for B12 deficiency in you, such as age, in your 60s or older, and which increases the likelihood for some of these stomach things I was just talking about a minute ago. Okay, now, another risky thing for acquiring B12 deficiency has to do with the small intestine problems. So health of our small intestine, remember the distal part of the small intestine called the ileum is exactly the place where the vitamin B12 and intrinsic factor complex is absorbed into the bloodstream. So the health of that part of the small intestine, it needs to be in good shape for it to do that job. So when you have a medical condition that affects the health of that area of your small intestine, that puts you at risk indeed for vitamin B12 deficiency. So that small intestine part, there's a disease that affects the small intestine health, and that's called Crohn's disease, which is another autoimmune disease that involves inflammation and dysfunction mainly of the small intestine. It's one of the inflammatory bowel diseases, not to be confused with ulcerative colitis, which is in the colon and one of the inflammatory bowel diseases. I'm not exactly sure if ulcerative colitis increases the likelihood for vitamin D12, B12 deficiency. I'm not sure that it does. But definitely Crohn's disease does. And then here's another one. Disease that could, affects the small intestine that could bring on B12 deficiency, tapeworm infection. I shouldn't laugh at that. So tapeworm infection, hopefully not many of us have that problem in this country anyway. Other conditions or situations that can increase the risk for low vitamin B12, like I was saying earlier, is older age, such as in the 60s and or older, and certainly the 70s and older. Alcoholism is also put on that list, and I'm not sure exactly how that plays a role, if it has something to do with the health of the stomach, or I saw one hint that maybe it has something to do with the choice of foods. Being, you know, people may not eat so well if they have alcoholism. But I say, that's a generalization that I think don't always fit. So anyway, I'm not sure about alcoholism, but I think it's a risk factor that you could consider. Okay, testing for B12 deficiency. How could you get tested for it? Well, it's a simple, non-fasting blood test. It's not expensive, to my knowledge. If your level is significantly low in the blood test for B12, then your healthcare provider might ask you for a repeat test of that, which is probably a good idea. And maybe, and it's a good idea, to add another test then, and that is a CBC or a complete blood count to look, because remember, low vitamin B12 level, one of the things that it can do is make your bone marrow have some problems in making the cells of your bloodstream, in other words, red cells, white cells, and platelets. Your doctor might want to also, if you have a low B12 level, they may want to also check that methylmalonic acid or MMA level and maybe homocysteine level, which would be both elevated, and that would help confirm vitamin B12 deficiencies. But I'm not sure the functional need to obtain those two blood tests. I'm not sure. A CBC, complete blood count, and a repeat check of the B12. Yes, I agree with that. There is more expensive blood testing that could be done, but I'm not even going to go into that now because I don't think it's necessary. And certainly out of the realm of this discussion today. So how is vitamin B12 deficiency treated? Well, the plan of attack for treatment, of course, I hope we all say, of course, will depend on a few factors, such as what the cause of the deficiency is in any individual, and whether or not things can be done to help fix the situation that's leading to that B12 deficiency, such as adjusting the foods eaten, or changing medications, such as the acid-lowering agents, if possible, to be stopped. But that would need to be done with, if you're doing that with the assistance of your healthcare provider, that would be good, because you don't want to stop them and then get an ulcer, and then you got maybe a worse problem. So, you know, let your healthcare provider help you decide on whether or not you're going to stop your acid-lowering agents and whether or not you're going to stop your metformin. Definitely a question that needs to be you working with your healthcare provider on that. Relative to bowel diseases like Crohn's disease, you know, hopefully you already have a gastroenterologist working with you, and that's something to talk to them about. You know, there's some new expensive immune system modulating medicines for Crohn's disease that can definitely help with the health of the small intestine, but there's consequences to that stuff. So, but you know, good and bad news on that. Also, treatment options may differ for B12 deficiency depending on how severe the B12 deficiency is, and depending on whether or not there are significant symptoms of low B12, which I'm going to get into in a minute. But if there's a severely low B12 and there are significant symptoms of low B12, then the healthcare provider might pick the B12 shot, shots initially, and then maybe transfer over to the oral or the pills later. That's a possibility. But I already told you that it turns out the pills at adequate doses theoretically enters the bloodstream as well as shots, so the literature says. But I think it's somewhat debatable given a situation of severely low B12 and significant symptoms of low B12 relative to starting out with the shot and then transferring over into the oral replacement after that, after a relatively short amount of time, like, I don't know, a handful of months. So the severity of the low and the severity of the symptoms is something you and your healthcare provider can discuss relative to then beginning replacement of B12. What are some of the symptoms and signs that can be present when a person has vitamin B12 deficiency? Well, it's variable and individualistic. So by variable, part of what I mean is these symptoms can vary from one person to the next, but they also can be vague symptoms, that is, symptoms that can be from other health conditions. Here's are some of the general symptoms that could come with vitamin B12 deficiency. Fatigue. So, what? Obviously, B12 deficiency isn't the only cause of fatigue. So fatigue, but you got to add B12 deficiency to a long list of other possible causes of fatigue. But fatigue is one possible symptom. Palpitations, an irregularity of the heart. Well, there's another one, long list of possible causes, but B12 deficiency is one of them. Skin pigmentation changes, such as, you know, the overall, all your skin, all over your body, hyperpigmentation, it gets darker and maybe lighter all over. That's a little less specific, but that's on the list. Here's two of them that I just had to put a question mark in my brain on, and weight loss and infertility. Really? Wow. But those are things to think about if you're having weight loss of uncertain. Well, so weight loss and infertility are two medical conditions that gosh, you got to be working very well with your healthcare provider on figuring them things out. It certainly ain't just B12 deficiency that can do that, but it might be good to know that that's on the potentially on the list. Here's one that I think is a little more certain, and that's you can get what's called a glossitis of the tongue, kind of an irritation on across your entire tongue. Then there are the neurologic symptoms or signs. In other words, because remember, vitamin B12, very important in the health of our brain and other nerves, the nerves and brain of our body and function of the nerves and brain, our brain. So therefore, if you have your smelling, your ability to smell changes, there's a variety of things that could cause that, but one of them could be low vitamin B12. Dementia, well, obviously a variety of things can do that, but vitamin B12 is on the list of things that needs to be checked when somebody has dementia. Numbness and tingling in hands and feet, a variety of things can cause that. Vitamin B12 deficiency happens to be one of them. Irritability. Whoa. That's interesting, but hey, if there's, a change in somebody's mood in a way that irritability is present and you can't, what's up with that? Well, maybe vitamin B12 is on the list of things that Matt should get looked at. And gait abnormalities or problems with balance in walking. Certainly, there are other brain and neurologic problems and medicinal problems, etc., that can cause problems with balance. But vitamin B12 deficiency is on the list. And then decreases in reflexes, your reflexes being not as robust as they used to be, then one could think about vitamin B12 deficiency. And then finally, remember, vitamin B12 is absolutely necessary for the production of our blood cells, be they red blood cells, white cells, and platelets. So anemia is one of the consequences potentially of low B12 and even what's called pancytopenia, or this is certainly not as common, but with B12 deficiency, unless it's severe. And pancytopenia means low red blood cells, low white blood cells, and low platelets, all of them. What a list of symptoms and signs. Holy cow. And please, let's all remember that this list of possible symptoms that can come with vitamin B12 deficiency are things that could absolutely be because of a wide variety of other causes, too. So these are not symptoms that are specific only to low vitamin B12. Therefore, a person that has any of those symptoms is best, of course, to talk with your healthcare provider about those symptoms. And then you and your provider could together think about potential causes, going one step at a time upon trying to help you. Like the old saying says, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Yeah, whatever that means. Well, that means don't have tunnel vision when you're trying to figure out what's going on causing your symptoms. You got to think of the big picture, other causes as well. We call it a differential diagnosis, a bunch of things to consider. Okay. Remember, however, that there's that list of risk factors could be one of the things that could push you or your healthcare provider into thinking that B12 deficiency might be leading to some of those signs and symptoms. And remember, the risk factors are dietary, such as vegan or vegetarian eating, or other dietary issues, stomach or bowel function issues and diseases, older age, and those certain medicines like acid-lowering products used continuously for a year or longer, and type 2 diabetes medication orally used 4 months or longer, metformin. Those are all things that are risk factors for B12 deficiency that you ought to know about. Well, I just finished the B12 story. I'm about to finish this show, but and move on to the next show, which is Planetary Radio. However, before I read the underwriters and the disclaimer and all that, I'm going to say one more thing about this issue of physicians. I just wanted to, I said at the beginning of the show I was going to talk about the issue of, that I, just to inform us all, have us all be on the same page of the physicians, the training of physicians are two categories of that, which are almost exactly alike, almost the same. And function, and when they're, these two categories of physicians function the same, there's no practical reason to care or to be concerned about whether or not your doctor, your physician, is an MD or a DO. MD stands for medical doctor. DO stands for doctor of osteopathy. In our day and age, in the year 2023, did I get that correct? Yes, 2023, DO and MD, think of them equal, as equal in training and equal in schooling and equal in the work they do, because it's the fact and truth. As a matter of fact, the residency training is, we MDs are with the DOs in our resident programs, and on medical staff, we're all in together. We do all the same thing. We're equivalent. I wish we had a different way of, I wish we, I don't know, maybe call it MD/DO, and we all had the same MD/DO or something. But truly, MDs go to a medical school. DOs go to a doctor of osteopathy school. There's only slight differences in those, which I'm not going to go into now. But they're essentially the same. That's my point of view as a family practice doctor in the year 2023. Hey, you know what? The Doctor Zen is made possible by you, the listeners, and your generous contributions to KZFR. And it's made possible by the generous contributions by D.A. Lampe, L-A-M-P, Construction, a proud supporter of KZFR and Community Radio in Northern California. For more information, visit dalampeconstruction.com. And D.A. Lampe, again, letter D, letter A, and then Lampe is L-A-M-P-E. And we're also thanking the generous contributions from Mountain Sports, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, camping, traveling, and enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. till 5:30 p.m., and it's at 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico. Servicing Chico and the North State since 1975. And again, I'm going to let you know that the opinions voiced on this program, The Doctor's Inn, do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. What you heard today was Ken Logan's, you heard Ken Logan's opinion. I also want to thank Mark Baker for his help with the technical aspects of this technical show. And I'm going to say the next show is Planetary Radio. And I'm going to switch you over to that momentarily. Maybe I'm going to switch. Well, I don't know when I'm going to switch you over to that. I think right now. So please stay tuned. tuned to Planetary Radio, and